Moving on to old business. So we have agenda item one, the short-term vacation rental policy recommendations, categorically exempt. Staff report, please.
And this was continued from last month because it was not made public.
Correct. Good morning, Haley Lane, Planning Director. So we've met on this item, this will be the fourth time. And to summarize our last meeting in December, there was a request from the commission to bring forth data on the percentage of vacation rental listings, you know, based on geographic zones. And so it was determined that based on these geographic zones, the percentage of vacation rental listings hovered at about 1% for all of the geographic areas other than McLeod, which was just at 4% or just under 4%, it was 3.99%. And so through that discussion, it was requested from the commission for staff to come back and research other California counties and, you know, potential caps that they have within their jurisdictions. It was also requested to look at, you know, similar counties. But what staff has found is, you know, through this analysis, it varies very widely, which is what you can see in the staff report package. Staff ended up looking at, you know, some other larger urban counties just to get, you know, more information in the staff report package. I will note, you know, caps are, you know, determined either like a hard number or a percentage or, you know, a cap on a location or a neighborhood. And so what you will find in the staff report package is it's varied a lot. You know, some jurisdictions, they will cap, you know, geographic areas or neighborhoods. Some have moratoriums on neighborhoods. Some have percentage caps. And so, you know, with this analysis, staff decided to bring forth the recommendation related to the cap policy at 10%, and the thought was, you know, the cap, the percentages are very, very low for all of our geographic areas, and we would assume it would take a while for a certain area, i.e. Doris or something, right, to reach 10%. And understand that caps are also moving targets, usually. So a lot of times if there is a county or an area where there's a certain cap, like 25%, once it gets closer to that, usually the commission will instruct staff to do some additional analysis to determine if that's still, you know, a realistic cap to be at. And so all of that information is in the staff report package. I will note we also have received a number of public comments, you know, related to this item. It seems that most of the public comments have been from property owners that are operating vacation rentals. And it seems that the, you know, summary of comments are in opposition mostly to, you know, the $20 lodger's tax recommendation or policy recommendation, and also the $500 fee for implementing some sort of annual monitoring program. And so that concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Could you, for the audience's sake, give a little background on why this process was started at reviewing the vacation rental and how this has come before the commission, please?
Sure. So after the Board of Supervisors had approved the 2.5-acre moratorium, it was instructed that the planning department would, you know, evaluate additional policy recommendations. And so we were on the docket to update our housing element, which we are legislatively required to do every 8 years. And so the contractor that we procured through that, we also had them, in addition and outside of the scope of the housing element, provide a vacation rental analysis report for staff and then also for the commission for information. And so that report basically highlighted existing conditions of vacation rentals in the county, also just rentals in general in the county, as well as case studies of how other jurisdictions are handling vacation rentals, what that looks like. And, you know, through that case study analysis provided, I believe it was, 10 or so policy recommendations for further discussion and determination by the commission. And so we first met on this item, I believe, our September meeting. And so through this process, through meeting. We have, the commission has, determined further detailed analysis, more information, and kind of have weeded out certain policy recommendations that you all have, not been in support of. And so, through just the natural progression of the conversation, this is, where we're at. And then the policy recommendations, those three that are highlighted in the staff report package, have been the most, feasible appetite of the commission. And so that's where we were at today.
Good. Thank you for that history. Any comments from the commission?
Yes.
Commissioner Beal?
And maybe Jeff or Tony can explain to you. Have we ever been asked to weigh in on the fee structure of a application from a that we don't discuss the application fee, and now we're asked to.
Actually, we have. Really, back in 1999, when we had the first update of the housing element, mm-hmm. which included this. This commission advised staff as to what reasonable fees at that time would be for what planning charges. It comes up every time an element that is has fees associated with it comes up for review. So you were not on that.
Okay. I don't feel comfortable weighing in on this. $500.
Mm-hmm. We weigh in, then it's up to the supervisors to say.
But I am opposed to per diem $20 per night.
Yeah.
That's a penalty tax that I don't think we want. I personally don't want to be involved with it. Mm-hmm.
I do have questions, but I think I'm in a. If there's no other commissioner,
I have some also, but after public hearing.
Public hearing. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. So at this time, I'd like to open up the public hearing. I do have some speaker cards. Are there any other members of the audience that would like to speak and fill out a speaker card? Let's see. So first. Any project, or let's see, this isn't really a project. I'm just going to go in order of receipt. So the first one I received was from Francis Gill.
I withdraw my request.
Okay. Thank you. The second one is from Missy Bullington. And then also, let's see, I believe we received public comment.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Please state your name and your address, please.
My name is Missy Bullington. I live at 719 Oak Street in McLeod. I own and operate a permitted vacation rental in McLeod. I have several concerns with the proposal and the vacation rental analysis report. The issue I find most concerning is that the commission's proposal is based on a report that clearly serves the interest of the firm that compiled it. Housing Tools Business is providing project management services and implementing affordable housing for government agencies. This company is also contracted with many agencies throughout the state of California to secure grants for affordable housing projects. My hunch is that targeting the short-term rentals has become a convenient target, and additional fees are helping you meet some kind of proposed matching funding or like a state or federal mandate. I have some other concerns. The BRAR states that it is increasingly challenging to find housing in Siskiyou County. That statement is made without citing a source or how the data was collected. The report also does not explain how Siskiyou County determined the amount of housing that would be sufficient for the population. And historically, the town of McLeod housed enough workers to operate mills, railroads, schools, and supporting businesses. Concerning, there's been a substantial decrease in industry, but no change in housing. One would presume there's sufficient housing in the county, in the city of McLeod, for the current population. The report also implies that short-term rentals are responsible for the lack of affordable housing or available housing. The report assumes that if the houses weren't vacation rentals, that they would be long-term rentals. And it hints that these two types of housing are interchangeable, even though they're operated completely differently. The house used for SDRs are more likely to be sold than rented, considering the rental rate that would have to be charged to cover mortgage, taxes, and insurance. It's also notable that the report only considers the number of vacant long-term rentals when making calculations about housing in the area. This completely disregards any other long-term rentals that currently house people living and working in Siskiyou County, including a 44-unit affordable housing unit in McLeod. It also doesn't consider home ownership as a possibility of housing. The data in the VRAR is based on income generating capacity and not actual income. The income in the report is based on 100% occupancy of a short-term rental. A successful SDR is about 40% of the time. Based on the data in the report, the SDRs would have earned $17 million last year, of which the county would have been paid $2 million in TOT. It's inflated by about $600 over the actual income received by the county. And the county has these numbers, so I'm not sure why the actual numbers were not used. They also don't consider the operating costs that would not likely be borne by a tenant in a long-term rental, like utilities, Wi-Fi, cable, heating, housekeeping, keeping the home in good order, replacing furniture, consumable items such as toilet paper, coffee, etc. The $20 a night fee would have a huge impact on doing business in Siskiyou County. As with any other businesses, inflation and operating costs continue to grow and narrow our profit margin. Should the county adopt this $20 a night impact fee, my SDR would be paying 26.5% in fees to the county every night. If McLeod rates start matching other destinations like Tahoe and Sonoma, travelers are going to choose to go to those areas which have more dining and entertainment options. Traveling to Northern California is appealing for many reasons, one of them being it's more affordable than those other tourist destinations. And also, if I already have people booked out a year in advance, who's going to pay that extra $20? Probably me. I don't understand the justification for inspecting the SDRs. If there has been health and safety issues, what are there SDRs that are not compliant? And would the inspection be based on conditions that are in effect when we got our use permits or on current regulations? And the report states the $500 fee would generate an estimated $75,000 for licensing and monitoring program. Isn't there a current licensing program? And with 151 SDRs and a 260-day work year, an inspector would need to complete about two inspections a day in a geographically large county. Are they considering hiring a full-time position for this job, or is it going to be absorbed by another position? And is the $75,000 in addition to salary, benefits, and pension for the personnel needed to take on these tasks? And isn't the county already having difficulties filling existing positions?
Through the chair, the timer went off, but the speaker was not on.
Okay. I have a request to let her finish. She's got one more paragraph, so I will go ahead and let you finish your letter.
Okay. The report puts sole responsibility on SDRs for the lack of affordable houses and provides the only solution would be for the SDRs to convert to long-term rentals. The report also implies that the SDRs are more lucrative than they actually are. Therefore, it conveniently concludes that because they are the problem, more fees should be imposed on the STRs. In both these statements, the logic is flawed. The impositions of fees on a single specific business in Siskiyou County to solve what the report is saying is a nationwide problem can easily be perceived as punitive, targeted, and possibly on someone's personal agenda. Okay. And I'll just say that it's unclear to me why the county would choose to discourage current and future businesses from operating here when other counties are working to attract business. So I have a lot of other copies too, if you want those.
We all have them.
We have them.
Oh, okay.
But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next speaker is Mr. Dimitri Vorek, if I pronounce that properly.
I think he left.
He left? Okay. Is there anybody online that would like to address the commission?
Seeing none.
Anybody else in the audience has... Sure. And again, please state your name and address.
Good morning. My name is Daniel Fay. I live at 416 Lawndale Court in McLeod. My wife and I are owners of a short-term rental in McLeod. It has been in continuous operation since 2007 with support from our neighbors and other tourism-based businesses in McLeod. We are here representing our own interests, of course, as well as a group of owners and operators of 18 short-term rental properties in and around McLeod. This group has submitted written comments, and I'll not repeat those here. They include alternative recommendations to what staff has offered, as well as questions. And we would ask the Planning Commission to consider and respond to these comments, questions, and recommendations in full before taking an action on resolution PC 2022-25. In addition, I have an additional question for the Commission that's not addressed in the letter. Our group is sympathetic to the concern for adequate affordable housing in the county, but we do not feel it is fair for the short-term rentals to bear the burden for solving this problem. The staff report included allocation of a portion of TOT funds as one of the options for addressing affordable housing. And this approach was also cited as one of the case studies for the city of Oakland. But this option was rejected because, quote, this amount is far less than would be required to meet the county's affordable housing needs. In addition, redirecting TOT revenues would create general fund shortfalls for other county services. We believe that even using a small portion of the TOT is a much more equitable way to spread the burden of generating the funds needed, and the shortfall argument is very unsatisfactory without more detailed justification. Will the Commission consider allocation or reconsider allocation of TOT funds to contribute to the affordable housing issue? Thank you.
Great, thank you as well.
Through the chair, I do have one individual with their hand raised at this time that would like to speak.
Okay, please state your name and address.
My name is Trent. I actually prefer not to share my address. I just have a few comments.
He doesn't have to. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
So I have a couple comments. After reading through the report, I see that you guys are planning to take on most of the advice of the report that came out as far as the $20 a night and the the $500 fee. However, I did notice, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I read it wrong, but it did suggest to remove the 2.5-acre stipulation, and it seems like you guys are not going to accept that, and I'm curious why you're accepting the ones that essentially, why some and not that one. To me, that one seems like the most limiting for small businesses in your county. I think you want to always make decisions that make it easier for smaller people to do business rather than larger. I think this entire situation is regressive in that it hurts the smaller person. The $500 fee, $20 a night, that is a smaller percentage for the large people, whereas the smaller businesses, this really hurts them. So I think you're hurting the little guy. I think to her own admission, she said a lot of this is based off of rural area or off of urban areas, and this is kind of a one size fits all that doesn't really take into consideration the rural and small parts of your county. All the way up in the mountains in these different places, it's going to be hurting the little guy. Further, I think that this is just another way that you guys are taxing people. I mean, think about the number of taxes these small business owners pay. They're paying the property taxes when they buy the place. They're paying sales tax on all the items that they put in the house. They're paying a 1% back to you on everything they've bought as a like a personal property tax. They're paying income tax on the money that they make from it. You guys already have an above average TOT. A lot of places are at 10%. You're already above average, and rather than taking the money from that, you're on top of that, you have a $2,000 application process, now a $500 annual fee, and you want to add $20 per night on top of that. To me, it's just, it comes across as greedy, and that you see vacation rentals as all of this money, and it's easy money, and, you know, like, let's take the money from them, and to me, it comes across greedy, it comes across not really understanding that a lot of these people that have really put their life savings into maybe a small vacation rental, they are barely on, not even hardly making money at all. And I just think this is overly aggressive. I would suggest that you remove the 2.5 acre stipulation, make it easier for people, because basically you're trying to tax them a lot more and you're not doing anything to help them. You're just making it harder for them.
Great, thank you for your comment. So, any other speakers?
Seeing none.
We have one more in the audience.
Sandra Hogan. I just briefly, after listening to this, wanted to simply say, so I manage 350 rentals in this county. Of that, 24 are Airbnbs. And so to kind of reiterate what was been said, of the 24 Airbnbs bed and breakfast that I manage, they would never be available for long-term rentals because they are all used by the owners. And I know you guys have been big proponents for if you own the land and it's done correctly, it should continue that way. But I'm also very involved in the city of Mount Shasta and what's happening with that STR movement right now and getting policies aligned. I don't know how much you guys have had, and I don't know if we can start a working group, but my one suggestion would be is, having been in this business for 16 years and being as involved as I am, no one's ever once called me and said, hey, how does this work, or what do you see, or what can we do, or what are the real facts of going on? And I would say I'm more than happy to jump in and help and give you real numbers and real facts because I do so much. Not that that's what you want, but I'm just offering it as a working group, something that can give you what owners feel and see, because I have so many that I have real
factor. Yep. Can I ask a good question?
Yes.
How many complaints do you see that with your vacation rentals that maybe that are out of compliance that you have to bring?
I actually have never had one complaint. I may have a neighbor that calls me because every neighbor of every one of my properties has my personal cell phone. And so I have one that calls and will say, hey, they're being a little loud at 10 o'clock at night. So then I get on the phone, I don't sleep.
Yeah.
So I get on the phone.
An inspection wouldn't help that.
An inspection by the city or the county doesn't necessarily help that because it's an annual inspection.
Right.
Do I agree with it? I do, because the last thing you want to do is have someone get passed on an inspection and then go downhill after that. Dunsmuir has put in a great policy of what happens, and their fee, I believe, is $370 a year, and that includes their inspections. And it's making sure that you are compliant. Your smoke detectors haven't gone bad. Your fire extinguishers are up.
So you're saying that district, McLeod District does an inspection right now?
Dunsmuir.
Dunsmuir.
City of Dunsmuir does.
Okay, that's in.
They just started that policy in the last year. City of Mount Shasta is kind of copying that, but hasn't been passed yet.
Okay.
So just,
I appreciate that update.
Thank you.
And so with that, I don't see any others. I'll go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission. I would like to say that as far as the letters, there were a lot of good points that were brought up, and I would like to go through some of the questions. One response is regarding that 2.5 acre minimum, it should be noted the commission did not support that. We have always been against that. However, we were overturned, as I recall, and that 2.5 minimum is not a commission issue. That was at the supervisor level. So with that, one other thing I would like to say is most of us up here are small business owners, so we are very sensitive to the cost of doing business in this county and in this state. So your comments are definitely heard and understood. So with that, I would like to go through, for clarification, Ms. Bullington's comments, starting with, it was in your packet,
yeah,
it starts off,
this morning.
It's dated January 17th.
It was one of the ones that came in late.
Yep, I think here's a packet.
I brought a copy this morning.
Here's your review. There's maybe a packet.
Should be in there, but.
Yeah, probably have it.
Maybe got this, but,
This for me to keep?
Yeah, that was a duplicate one, I think it was Blair's. So, a couple of questions here. So, the $20 per night fee, that money was being looked at by the consultant as a recommendation, to again fund what activity at the county level?
It would go towards a pot for affordable housing.
Okay. So.
And to be clear, the affordable housing component is or is not a mandate by the state to counties to meet a state perceived need.
Correct, that is a state mandate.
Okay, so.
Chair, just a second.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go down that same line. How can the state do that when they don't come and look at the geographical area that we live in as an individual thing, instead of having this master form that everybody has to comply to?
They do unfunded mandates daily.
Yeah.
I know that.
This is just another one of them.
Yep. I know that.
So,
but I don't have to like it, and I don't.
So back to the affordable housing component. I don't personally think it is fair that short-term rentals are being asked to fund affordable housing, because
it's like you're
short-term rentals aren't necessarily the reason for affordable housing. There's a lot of other factors. And so I personally would not support short-term rentals being the sole funding source for affordable housing in Siskiyou County, because it doesn't seem, I don't know that that's a correlation. I do agree with Ms. Bullington's recommendation, or note two, that short-term rentals don't necessarily automatically turn into long-term rentals, especially given the, from a small landowner perspective of having a long-term rental, the rules in this state for evictions and that sort of thing deter short-term rentals a lot, unless you have a property agency to oversee it. So I don't think that's a one-to-one comparison. I think if anything, it just means more houses would be on the market for sale. Mm-hmm. And I do think that is something missing, is we're only looking at, as far as housing component, we are only looking at rentals versus ownership. Is that, I didn't see much about ownership support. So that is a question. Okay, and then on to the $500 fee. So currently, let's review the fees that a short-term rental pays. So there's the initial application fee of $1,250, or what's the application fee for a short-term rental? For like a brand new, they're going to apply.
Depends what it is, right?
Through the chair?
Yeah, please.
The Matheny use permit for planning fees, it was $1,694.
$1,600, and that's an average fee structure?
That's approximately what it is.
Okay, and is it a fee structure based on square footage, on, like, how is it determined?
So, we have a fee schedule, so it just depends on what it is that they're doing. So the use permit fee itself is $950, then there's a categorical exemption fee of $300, environmental health, 200, public works review is 100, and then there's the building inspection fee of 94, and then county council of $50.
So would Happy Camp pay the same fee as, say, one in Gazelle?
Yes.
Mm. Okay. So those are the initial fees, and then annual fees.
There are no annual fees from our department. I believe that business licenses, should they need to be renewed, they do have a fee.
Yeah, they do.
And I think that's like $74, okay, somewhere around there.
And then they pay, I'm seeing 14% TOT. And there was a comment made that that's above the average. State average? Is that like...
Well, the TOT was voted in by the voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. It was. I'm
now
just trying to...
That was not set by us.
No, I know that's not set by us because we can't create taxes, yeah, at this commission, but just trying to get an understanding of the costs associated with... So that 14%, and then they would have property management fees if they're doing that. But there's no annual fee for any inspections or, like, say you have a complaint, mm-hmm, and you need to go investigate. Is that landowner charged for the time? So are you funded then from the general fund? How does that work?
No, yeah, correct. It's absorbed for the current salaries that we have with code enforcement officers.
Okay.
I think it's important to realize that the TOT tax goes into the general fund.
Yes,
and
thank
it's the discretion of the county board of supervisors and the county administrator to decide. They can put all that money if they wanted to in the low cost of it. Right? So
yeah, okay.
It's unrestricted. Those are unrestricted.
Unrestricted funds. I just wanted to double check that. Okay. And some of this I know, I'm just putting it all out.
To be clear, we discussed this at several preceding meetings. While we're saying $500, that is a, lack of better terms, a ballpark figure, because the county needs to do a real assessment at what the realized cost would be for providing those inspections, and it could most likely be less than 500, but the 500 was used because staff felt it most likely would not be more than that. Am I correct? That's still kind of the discussion around the 500?
That's correct. It would be the auditor who would determine the ultimate cost for that inspection fee should it be approved.
And it's basically cost of labor of 1.25, 1.5 individuals, whatever their pay rate is, plus benefits, etc.
Right. It's I'm not sure the exact formula that the auditor would use, but they would determine all costs that would be associated with those inspections to come up with that number.
Okay, so auditor. And that's an annual fee, the suggested annual fee.
That's correct.
Okay. And then another question. So is this, would this be a new position or just funding the inspections that are already occurring?
Inspections that are already occurring.
Okay. And then, and that would be from our enforcement officers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how many inspections do they currently do? Or is, again, it's just complaint driven?
Complaint driven.
And then with the new change, it wouldn't be complaint driven. It would be... automatic and with every vacation rental, as you know, with the proposal, be inspected yearly, every other year? Like, what's that look like?
Right, I mean, these are high level policy recommendations, but the intent would be, yes, every vacation rental would be inspected annually.
I think I mentioned last time, renting charges $1,200 for that same fee.
Yearly.
And it seems hard that you could justify.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway.
Okay. Yearly audit for compliance, okay.
110,000 people live in the city of Redding.
Yeah.
So that they have a lot more income.
The prevailing wage is probably higher too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then let's see. There was another recommendation from Mr. Fay. If you guys have his alternative recommendations. What about the idea when somebody sells a home that there's a transfer fee on that conditional use permit?
I'll defer to council because since it's a land use entitlement, I'm not sure how the type of fee like that would work.
Okay.
The fee would really be a tax. It would have to go to the voters.
Okay.
What's the look?
Yeah, so that would be a tax to vote on. Okay. And then instead of the $500 fee, there was a suggestion to propose a $100 renewal fee to be paid to the county annually to fund inspections no more frequently than every 3 years on active use permits. What's your thoughts on that?
I would just say this is for discussion in the Planning Commission. You know, there are very different variables that could apply here and your recommendation to the board. For conversation. Obviously, we could do annual as we have proposed, and City of Dunsmuir has example of that in the works right now. Looking at their fee that they have, it's pretty much in line with what we're proposing. I know the fire chief does the inspections down there, and very little travel time, right? Obviously, Siskiyou County is a lot wider range that we have to incur costs for travel and so forth. So. You know, annually, every third year, and that's all up for discussion.
I have a question with that then. So, as far as the enforcement officers that we have currently, what is their workload like currently so that they would be able to do an annual inspection or an every other year inspection? Because that would be my concern, because it seems like we're always short-staffed. Or those positions aren't filled. So then if somebody is given a fee and then that inspection isn't done, they're off doing other types of inspections. Like, I don't want to charge a fee and then that work not get done because there's not enough staff time allocated.
So. Yeah, just generally speaking, it's dynamic, right? Currently, we're fairly well staffed, but we do have a heavy workload. We had just under 1,000 complaints to respond to last year. To deal with, and as you know, we're in the middle of cannabis, so a lot of issues associated with that. So, you know, there's no amount of time to dwell on, so I'll say that.
So, hearing that, I guess my question would be the reality of being able to do an inspection if you're collecting a fee with already 1,000 complaints logged that were not, that are yet to be reviewed, or is that just was. What you reviewed was that 1,000 complaints.
Those were submitted and reviewed. Some had code cases that were open, some did not. Just depends on the situation.
Okay. Is there
but
a backlog?
All that to say, you know, we have to adjust. If present time we can handle, we would handle it. If not, then we have to seek an additional officer.
Have you collaborated with the county administrator on any of these issues with regard to the vacation rule yet?
No, I have not.
Is there a way, you know, because I think, you know, for it's the you know, time and time again, we get, you know, the vacation rental use permits and adjacent landowners come or write comments about the noise, this and that. Is there a way to fine just those that are bad actors, if you will, or continually have issues versus just the general population? I guess one of my concerns would be, like, how are the complaints generated? Are they legitimate? But has there been any discussion at staff level to only charge the people that you're spending time on?
That would be potentially covered in a citation from the civil, which we have in place currently. So if there is a nuisance that was occurring at establishment, was reoccurring, then we have the ability to do a civil action or a citation.
And are those fees substantial enough to cause a deterrent? Or
if it's serious enough, it comes back to us to pull the permit.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
So that's
not for a vacation rental, but we have it for.
Yeah, I'll let Chair Mello. I'll take a break on my questions, but I think I have questions.
Getting back to the TOT, property taxes, etc. And they go to the general fund, correct? And I believe the term, the dollar amount of $330,000 was mentioned a couple of meetings ago.
$386,000.
Of revenue that was generated by the vacation rentals?
Just under $400,386.
Okay. When I was on the city council in Mount Shasta, a portion of the TOT of the motels in the city limits, I think it was 2 cents, came to the city, or to the Chamber of Commerce, actually. And the rest of it went to the city and the general fund, I presume. Can we earmark these things from vacation rentals to be specifically used for inspections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
You could recommend it. I recommend, but that's it.
That's it.
Because my big deal here is the cost. One of the articles I read said they had a 64% annual vacation rental use. It wasn't, you know, none of them had 100%. So, is there any way that we can do that? Probably not, because general fund, you don't have to, when it goes to the general fund, it can be spent for anything.
Mm-hmm.
If it came here specifically for inspections, for
If you wanted to make it binding, you would probably have to send it back to the voters as a specific purpose tax.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I mean, the Board of Supervisors could do that anyways, but they're bound to do it.
No comment on that right now.
Commissioner Veal, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm prepared to move on to $500. That's the recommendation. On the 2.5 acres, I'd leave it because I think the supervisors are pretty set on that 2.5 acres. I would talk about this before. You have community service districts in McLeod and Lake Shastina that are very capable, those board of directors are very capable of handling these applications, and I don't know why we don't turn that over to them. Let them do all this inspection paperwork.
Well, this is one of the things I brought up. There is an elected board in the town of McLeod.
Well, did you guys get, from 2020?
Yes, I got it right here.
The McLeod Community Services District submitted a letter on this issue.
Well, that's for the Board of Supervisors. I guess they could designate these applications that come through the Community Services District, could they not? And not, we would not handle it?
No, because the community services district is mainly to deal with infrastructure. That's the intent of that type of special district. They don't deal with land use entitlements.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say lot splits or that, but I'm talking about this. Anyway. So those are my comments. And I would I would vote no on the $20 per diem.
Commissioner Fowle?
Yeah.
Do you have comments, questions?
Yes.
Would you like to share those?
So we as a county are faced by state law to update the housing element. Fact.
Yep.
That's a fact. Mm-hmm. Each county in this wonderful frickin' state are being told, mandated, to be able to provide X amount of affordable housing based upon population.
Mm-hmm.
Fact.
Mm-hmm.
Mandated, not funded.
Correct.
Therefore, each respective county must, in order to meet the mandate, must come up with a way to fund said mandate. Now, in the last 19 to 21 months, I've enjoyed telling the state to stick it where the sun doesn't shine. What's the penalty for telling the state to stick it where the sun doesn't shine on this particular mandate? What can happen to the county?
Well, I'll start. You know, recently on our Internet County Council forum, we shared a letter, and apparently it's happened to certain counties, but there are private groups out there that will sue the counties if they fail to enact the required housing element, which would include affordable housing. And essentially, otherwise, the groups are threatening that basically the county will need to approve any development project that goes forward as is, unless and until a general plan is enacted. Until the housing element is enacted. I suppose that's aside from whatever state mandates may be affected. I'm not as familiar state funding. I'm not as familiar with that. I believe also the community development partners refer to the fact that it could affect funding. But I do know, and I have seen private interest groups threaten to sue counties who don't enact these things.
Okay, and I get that. I guess here is where I'm struggling with this one. Because, and this is my own humble opinion, I believe that our incorporated cities, where, I'll back up, the incorporated cities have or make the most logical sense to provide affordable housing as the housing is closer to the business.
Certainly.
The services, the businesses, the hospitals, the schools, etc. Does the state mandate upon the counties include available affordable housing within incorporated areas, or is the mandate being placed strictly on unincorporated?
Both.
Or does it consider the two?
Both.
Cities are.
The mandate is all jurisdictions, so both
okay.
County and municipalities. Counties and municipalities.
So with existing affordable housing in Siskiyou County, if you include 100%. The affordable housing within Yreka, Mount Shasta, Fort Jones, Etna,
there's nine
Tule Lake,
mm-hmm.
There's nine incorporated cities.
We still are under the level mandated?
Correct, because this is a newer mandate, so it's new affordable housing, not existing.
Okay.
Oh,
now,
wait, say
that's
that
why I'm following down this path.
Attaboy, keep on them, bud.
So yes, it's new affordable housing.
Not existing.
Not existing. So yeah. Council, in your meetings with other counties, is there any impetus, any drive, any desire to challenge the mandate to include existing if it meets necessary mandated levels?
We haven't, I have not seen that type of discussion. It's more, it's, there's been any discussion specifically how to handle what's being given to do for the county. So, no, there isn't.
What?
Hasn't been.
Okay. Next question. What is the mandated percentage for affordable housing within Siskiyou County? What has been mandated? How many do we need? How many apartments? How many domiciles?
Still that they will come.
No, I'm following a legal progression here because that's the only way you deal with the state.
I don't have the number in my head, so maybe.
What is the state saying, A, we needed to have before the new affordable housing? Were we above? Were we below? Were we at? And then based upon that answer with the new mandate, if you were to include that and forget that it was new, but whatever number it was, do we already meet it with the existing levels?
So our arena number is 2 units.
In the county?
Yes.
Okay, you say 2 units. That's not 2 domiciles, though, right?
Right.
Or is it?
No, 2 units.
And so how many total domiciles, residences, locations to lay ahead and use a toilet?
Same. So just 2 locations, two separate locations, 2 separate parcels.
So the mandate is parcel, not actual sink, toilet, bed.
Correct.
Well, isn't that just a fine howdy-do?
Can I ask a question real quick? What is, you know, I'm trying to read this Housing Act. What is our requirement? What are we as a county required to do to enact the legislation? Like, what is our role here? Like, how do we just go get grants? Like, I have a disconnect, so, the state's made this mandate.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, short of the county going out and building
sure.
condos or apartment complexes, I don't know what the county's role is. And I think I had this question before, and I'm still not fully clear
sure.
on what are we required to do to meet County Housing Affordability Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so within the housing element law, there's a slew of unfunded mandates, particularly to this. Normally HCD, so Housing and Community Development, wants a local jurisdiction to show the availability that this development can happen. So usually with these RENA numbers, a local jurisdiction has to look at parcels where an increase of housing density and affordable housing units fits, you know, meet certain services and infrastructure. And so we as the planning department have to account for, you know, essentially the upzoning of 2 parcels to allow for that development to take place.
Okay. So short,
and it has to be a by right use.
Okay.
As well.
So I did see on here that the governor has made a blanket statement that, if I'm understanding this correctly, that now it's a by right use
mm-hmm.
to build on commercially zoned properties multi-unit housing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we, so with that, so they're looking at the commercial, is there commercial, say, around Wairika or Mount Shasta that has been deemed appropriate, or just they can build it anywhere?
Now you're headed down my same path. Yeah, we're going down the same rabbit hole.
Yep, because back to, you know, the short-term rentals, like this is residential. They're now going, you know, like, no, it needs to actually be commercial because you need these multifamily units for affordable housing, because the reality is single-family homes with all of the new building requirements is very hard to meet this 30% threshold to be considered low income, especially if you're doing the math. If you are a low income, say you work, let's see, what's minimum wage, $16.50?
Walmart's paying $18.
Okay, and then you got to do 30%. They can only afford less than $1,000 a month on housing. So, yay, you're not going to rent a multifamily home or a single family home for less than $1,000 a month. That's an apartment. So,
and actually, by their calculations, the way they calculated it, I believe it's $678 per month for housing.
And I don't know apartments that rent for that locally, but at least private managed apartments. So with that, how do vacation rentals get tied in to funding all of this? Like, where's that link? I think that...
Right. So as mentioned, Housing Tools, they, you know, completed and created this vacation rental analysis report. And so the intent of that was just to look to see how other jurisdictions are, you know, handling vacation rentals and how they also may potentially be handling housing element, you know, mandates, right? So this is purely just recommendation from what came from the consultant, just okay. As a, hey, this is what how other counties are handling in tandem, you know, vacation rental regulation and then also housing element mandates.
The other element is that it's the advantage of cities to try to find low-cost housing because there's a private company in town here that wants to expand 60 to 100 people. It's very hard for them to expand 60 to 100 people if there's not housing. And that nursery down there in Gazelle, 100 people, right, if they want.
Easily.
And so to expand 100 people, you're going to have to find housing for them, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, and I know how that...
It's a two-edged sword. I mean, we need the commercial expansion of a business.
Yep.
And then we don't really want housing. Housing is not a popular thing in this state.
Yeah. No, and I get that. I guess my big disconnect is shouldering that on the short-term rentals. With that, are you aware of other modes of funding outside of short-term rentals? Like, how is it private enterprise coming in and developing?
Yeah. Well,
and then they just go get grants.
Sure. Or, yeah, nonprofits or housing authorities
obtaining
funding.
That's all...
Low cost, yes.
Grant funded.
And it's probably a grant to a nonprofit or...
So does that meet with that new development there? Are we in compliance?
City of Wairika is...
But don't we encompass that? Because, like...
That's separate.
So are there other restrictions on the county or to meet that goal? Like, you have to be half a mile from a hospital or 5 miles from a hospital? Because, like, I'm looking at the zoning, you know, in my head, in commercial zoning, it's along I-5 or along the freeways. And you may be, like, there's no bus stops, you know, so if they're low income, they... You know, using public transportation, how do we support that in this county?
Okay. So, may I come back to my
path you may.
That you're beating around? Council, does the mandate require that the county A have vacant, commercially zoned parcels available for potential affordable housing, or B, must within so many years build on commercially zoned parcels affordable housing?
Well, to meet our goals, we actually have to have the affordable housing. However, all that can be asked of us is to accommodate that it can be done.
Okay. And so what I'm hearing from Haley is that we need, as a county, unincorporated, at least two commercially zoned parcels that are currently vacant that should a developer come in and want to build affordable housing, they could, if they so chose, buy one of these parcels commercially zoned and proceed to build affordable housing. Do we have at least two vacant commercially zoned parcels in Siskiyou County?
Through the chair?
Yes.
So I want to clarify that we don't specifically have to have two separate parcels. We just have to have, if it's one, a parcel that could accommodate at least two units.
Oh, I'm going above and beyond the state
mandate. Right. So let me,
I want to make our governor happy.
So as part of the housing element study, the contracted representative for us, Housing Tools, they identified and they worked with county staff on this. We looked at parcels that might be available and be compliant with the requirements that are in the state code. And they identified a single parcel which could be developed for both of those. It's actually already commercially zoned, and multifamily housing and apartment dwellings are already allowed by right on that district right now. Our current code already allows it. It's the CU district, which is the neighborhood commercial district, and it's a parcel that the county owns in the Chacina subdivision. So one of the reasons that it was identified is because it does have the CSC support for the infrastructure as far as the septic and the water service. So we do have a parcel identified that could be utilized to meet our RENA. However, we are not limited to only that parcel. If there are other parcels within the county or even already partially developed parcels within the county that want to add another unit, perhaps an accessory dwelling unit, that they would like to have the income limitations that are required to meet that RENA, that also could be used.
Okay, so that's checkbox number one.
Maybe I didn't interrupt, Jeff, but we've got a motion here on the vacation rental. We're kind of getting off of that.
No, we're not. It's directly tied, because I'm trying to come up with findings for a motion one way or the other.
But how would that affect, how would the...
Because the fees are
directly tied to it, and I'm trying to come up with findings to go a particular direction.
Yeah.
We need to have findings to support the motion that we make, whether it be for or against either any of these components.
Yeah, that part of the fees go, that there's the one $500 fee that goes towards staff time for inspection.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But then the nightly fees directly support affordable housing.
Okay, but aren't we ready to make a motion to deny that?
I don't believe we have significant findings to support a lawsuit. I'm making sure we have the findings, so if we get drug into court on this, the county...
You mean if we deny, if our recommendation...
Whether we deny or support it, okay. We need to have the findings to support in court. Because I, for one, am sick and tired of these frivolous lawsuits against the county.
Yes. Okay, go ahead. I'm just looking at the other people out there that they...
I'm going to take the time it takes to do it right the first time, so we're not beating a damn dead horse and filling the room with stink.
Okay.
So, counsel, question number two on this. Rachel and Haley have addressed, we do have an identified parcel.
Correct.
The next question for counsel, is there any part of the mandate that requires the county to provide the funding to assist and or develop slash build said affordable housing?
No, I'm not aware of any.
So.
I think usually a government will work with either federal or state agencies or other nonprofits to obtain grant funding.
Thank you for making that public. So with that being said, Tools, the contractor, made a recommendation in their study that what other counties have done is assess tax fee additional, whatever you want to call it, in order to put money from private into public to potentially provide in-kind funding for a developer to build affordable housing on approved parcel. Mm-hmm. It is not a requirement under the state mandate within the Housing Element Act.
No.
Therefore, the finding can be that due to the fact it is not state mandated that the county provide the funding, we do not see the need or necessity of assessing a $20 per night additional fee on STRs.
That would be a reasonable finding.
There, Mr. Veal, is the finding to reject the $20.
Okay, right. And I hope those, your comments are passed on to the Board of Supervisors, because that's going to be the final analysis.
I agree. I just want to make sure we have the finding.
Yep.
Whatever the Board of Supervisors does, I want to feel good about what we did.
We did. Yeah.
That's all. Okay. Then the ball's in their court.
Yeah.
Right. And I have some real issues with this whole mess.
Yep.
Okay.
Especially the funding. Now I want to ask one question and I need to have a break.
Okay.
Do property taxes, are they paid on these low income structures to the county?
Yes.
As far as I know, there's no exception.
Yes.
Okay, who pays them?
Property owner.
Property owner.
And who's the property owner? State of California or the feds?
No, private individual.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Do you need a break before I move into my next set of findings?
Yes, sir.
I think he needs an immediate break. So can we take can we take a 5-minute recess? We'll return back at 11:05.